Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit detectthesos.com to learn more.
Oh, we've made it. Happy hump day. Hope you're having a great Wednesday. Beautiful weather outside. It's kind of got a little bit of everything, right? Woke up, it was a little chilly. Like, ooh, it does feel like the start of training camp. And now we're going to be in the 80s. I mean, a 30-degree temperature swing. Make sure you take your vitamin C, right? Because isn't it the temperature swing that messes with your immune system? I have no idea. We are starting a segment today that we are going to do. If I have to beg, borrow, and steal, we will do this segment every Wednesday at 1 o'clock. And it is to have an elected Democrat on the air to talk about the topics going on in their district, in their city, in their county, and some of the national stuff that we've been talking about as well. And I'm happy to say that our first guest, the first to do it, will be Mitch Nowakowski. He's the Fillmore District Council member and also the vice chair of the Erie County Democrats. Mitch, good afternoon.
Hey, Joe, how are you?
Doing all right, man. Really appreciate you agreeing to this. And I have a feeling you'll probably be on the leaderboard after a few months of this segment. But I really appreciate you you joining us today.
I appreciate it. And Comptroller Hardwick said that I have to refer to you as Joe and not Beamer. So I'm taking that as the inner teacher in him scolding me in class to refer to you as Joe.
Mitch, I'm happy you're on the show. You can refer to me however you want. But, you know, on Sundays, that was Hardwick's show. So I guess on Sundays you have to listen to Hardwick. Mitch, the first thing I want to go to, and I want to touch on a little bit of everything, but I want to start in the city of Buffalo. Sean Ryan is the Democrat in November. He was the endorsed Democrat in the primary. And I know it's gone. We're in general election mode. But do you think that Mayor Chris Scanlon got a fair chance to prove himself as mayor?
So let me break that down in a few ways. So anyone that would have become acting mayor after Byron Brown leaving office would have had an uphill climb because we currently are facing a fiscal deficit that was years in the makings. We have a lot of folks and people that we represent that want better city services. And anyone that would have been in that position would have had or been flanked with What's going to be different? Are you going to be more of the same? So when I saw the election results come, where Senator Wright was able to prevail over, you know, a double-digit lead, you know, almost 11 to 12%, showed that people wanted something different after 20 years. So I think if it was Mickey Mouse as the acting mayor, or if I was, it would have been, we would have been flanked with that. And, you know, I think that, you know, I've even told the center, I've told people that, you know, after acting mayor Chris Scanlon came into office, people were responding to my emails. There was a change. But because of the small amount of time that he was able to make, and, you know, think about it, you become acting mayor and you have to run for reelection, and, you know, you need to get good commissioners and a top team in there. Who of a top tier would come over to work for somebody that isn't guaranteed the job? So I think that he had a tough road by being acting mayor. But, you know, when you see that where the senator won, which he ended up squeaking out a win in the Fillmore district, but he won, you know, the east side of Buffalo. He won Ellicott, Maston, University. More people in the Delaware district came out to vote for Senator Ryan than those that came out to vote for Chris Scanlon in South Buffalo. So when you look at those numbers, to me, they reflect a campaign that, number one, you have to ID your voters. You have to talk about issues that they care about, and then you got to pull them out. So in my opinion, elections are, you know, 70% hard work, and the rest is timing and a little luck. And if you strike them all in the same distance, you become a winner. So I do, as someone who did propose to have Democratic forums, I do believe that they were open. I was in those meetings where, you know, tensions got a little tense. People were talking. They you know, said who they wanted, and people were heard, and it was productive, you know, productive conversations. And so the committee reached a decision. But full stop, just so folks know that I was at one point, you know, worked for Sean Ryan as an intern when I was in college. So he helped bring me to the dance of city politics.
Do you think, you know, speaking of those forums, and I know Democrats don't care what I think, but do you think if there were more media presence in those forums, there wouldn't be so many questions from people like me and others?
You know, I think so. And I think that, to be honest, when all of the candidates had began the forums, Joe, when I mean, I was even telling people to go up, ask this question, ask about downtown, ask about the animal shelter. And you saw literally their campaigns then refocus on what issues they began to talk about, because they were hearing from real people in real time about what people wanted in the city of Buffalo. So some people have good nights, some people have bad nights. I would say for everyone on stage, they gradually had gotten better with the questions. And, you know, even Senator Ryan will even tell you that, you know, one of his debates probably wasn't his best, but he was able to wrap it up at the end. And a lot of it is just being super in tune and talking what people actually care about. And when you're in office, Joe, for like 13, 14 years, it's easy to be in your echo chamber of staffers who are going to only tell you this. So it's super important that, you know, you stay in the game of retail politics and you talk to people and you figure out what's going on in their lives and what they want to see. And then you form a campaign around it to be able to win that truly listens to people.
Mitch, now, like we said, we're heading to November. Sean Ryan is the candidate going up against James Gardner on the Republican side. Bail reform, obviously, in the spotlight after last week's murder in the city of Buffalo by Ricky Crouch, who had been in prison for murder and then had found himself arrested twice in the month of May. James Gardner, and I would say a lot of people are saying that bail reform is the reason this man was allowed back on the streets. Your thought on that, and just Mitch, and overall, I mean, can Republicans and Democrats come to a compromise on bail reform? Are there Democrats that can admit maybe we can take a look and pull back on some of the things that were done a few years ago?
I think that if Democrats and Republicans come together to actually want to iron out issues from bail reform to immigration, that compromise could happen. It's just, you know, what I think is that, you know, if either party comes together, that when you return with a compromise, you don't get, you know, you don't face pushback within your own party to try to work with people. And, you know, I just want to give, you know, our deepest condolences to what happened. That is an absolute tragic act of violence. And, you know, I think when we're talking about bail reform, I think that, you know, the constituents that I represent, they are very focused on the quality of life issues. They are saying, look, we're starting to see, you know, I was a victim of the Kia boys a couple times, stealing my car, bashing my windows. You know, sometimes you see vagrancy, you see open drug use, you see, your perception is your reality. So if you don't see the quality of life issues improving in urban areas or where you live, you oftentimes want to draw some form of a conclusion. Is it bail reform? Is it this policy over here? Is it our stance over here? Is it our education system? And people oftentimes want to gravitate towards one thing to be able to say, this is it. This is the cause of our plight. And I think that, you know, we have to examine bail reform. You know, the genesis of bail is saying, look, if I grew up in Orchard Park, so say I had committed, I shoplifted something from 7-Eleven, and you know, I'm in, detained, and it's $1,000 for me to get out. But the same kid provides or does the same thing, steals the same thing from 7-Eleven, but in the city of Buffalo, bail set at $1,000. I get out because I have the privilege to have parents that could be able to post bail. But the kid who committed the same crime didn't has to sit in prison. And then, you know, oftentimes when, you know, you sit in prison, you're more likely to take any type of deal just to get out, where someone with privilege would have had an attorney and been able to work out a better deal, which would have, you know, lessened the consequences in their life. But when it comes down to bail reform, I think that, you know, from what I hear from, you know, a lot of people who want to debate the issue, they state that the judges have the discretion to impose bail, and they have the discretion to make these determinations themselves. And then when you sometimes ask the flip side, they say, no, judges don't have it. They're hamstrung to these laws. So I think a lot of it is looking at the actual legislation that's proposed. I know that it's been tweaked through budget negotiations when a series of bills have passed, and to see what's leading to what's happening, and or at least what people think are happening, and I think that if Democrats and Republicans want to come up with a deal on how to bring harmony to this situation and ultimately keep people safe and be fair at the same time, I think that, you know, compromise is key.
But Mitch, so what's the disconnect within the Democrat Party? Because you have people like Mayor Scanlon, John Flynn, both Democrats, who say that the bail reform has gone too far. And then you have people in Albany, like Sean Ryan, who defend their decisions when it comes to bail reform. Is there a difference with seeing it firsthand from City Hall, like you, Scanlon, and Flynn, and then someone like Sean Ryan, who, let's be honest, for a time has been removed in Albany?
So I think that, you know, I'm very lucky that I got my start in municipal politics, because if you start in City Hall and you are working on the ground for people, you just systematically see things differently. So even if it's, you know, if it's programs, money coming down from Albany, a series of policies, I'm like, I'm the first one to say, wait, what does this look like in real life? What does this mean to actual communities? Instead of just being policy words on a piece of paper. So, you know, John Flynn is a really good guy and was a great DA. And Chris Scanlon is the acting mayor and has to see and respond to emergencies every single day. So I do think that, you know, when the senator, who I believe will be victorious in November, comes, may look at certain issues differently, because, you know, a mayor job is it's a day-to-day practitioner job. But ultimately, you know, the senator is going to look at it is it easy to just point to one problem, say this is bail reform because we let them out on bail. And I think that it's going to make people, it's going to make him look at things differently. But we need to ultimately come to is how are people who are clearly demonstrating, danger to the community, out on the street. I think that where I start is even before bail reform was this person that we're discussing after the tragedy that happened was early released from prison, early paroled. So where was the parole board making these determinations? And then ultimately, what judge reviewed these series of infractions and restraining orders? And then how are they not detained if you're basing evidence on if people can be fit for society and not pose a harm to others. So it's really complex, and you're right. There is, Democrats on both sides of this. And I think that, you know, once and for all, we shouldn't be. I mean, if I was a Democratic strategist, I would say I'm sick of having Republicans beat up on Democrats on this issue. You know, what's the genesis here? What's the real deal? And either come up with legislation that can, you know, lead to better, you know, and safer conditions, or ultimately defend your position that ultimately that these things are caused not because of bail reform.
Mitch, something you brought up, illegal immigration, and that obviously was big the first Trump term. It was big at election time during, you know, when Trump was elected for his second term. And I'm going to give you my look on it, and then I'd like to hear, you know, where you oppose what I said and where maybe we agree. My view is if you come over the border illegally, you've broken the law and should be removed. I also feel that the Biden administration for 4 years didn't look at the border because their goal was to do 180 of everything Trump did, except obviously the Biden administration continued the Trump tax cuts. So I'm just a little confused when I see so much pushback on ICE, so much pushback on deportations of people who, hey, I'm welcome to anybody. This is the best country to ever exist. And if you want to come here, I want you to come here. I just want you to do it the right way. I'm missing what is so wrong with trying to enforce the laws of the border.
Well, so I'm going to put that down in a few ways. And the first is I want to start off is what you said is, you know, that we're proud to be American. We're proud to live in the United States of America. And when there's turmoil in other countries or there's unrest in other countries, individuals flock our country because we are, you know, one of the greatest nations on earth, and that we are America. So that global instability leads to people to flock our borders. But when we go back in time, Joe, like, let's think about the times of President Reagan and Vice President George Bush and then President George Bush. There, even as Republicans, the way they spoke about immigration was far different than the way that they spoke today. And the last time Reagan, you know, was able to handle immigration was in I think 1986, I believe, when immigration reform was passed. And, you know, they were able to come up with a compromise. And then think about where what you said is that, you know, like Trump had brought up during his presidential races, immigration. I was at the polls with then assembly member, now Judge Monica Wallace, and Cheek DeWoggins were talking about illegal immigration. And we have to be, you know, I know politicians want to play hot potato sometimes, but we have to be honest. Immigration is a federal issue. Congress must act, not the state legislature, local legislatures. We have to have the problem solved, you know, on the federal level where it is and where it belongs. But ultimately, I think that, you know, I think that when we have the conversation about immigration, I think that it's oftentimes we don't talk about necessarily the facts or a compromise. You know, we want to treat people humanely. And I think that sometimes when we have this with this debate, we take and strip the humanity of people who already live here, who are already producing to the economy, who are already working, who are already our neighbors. So if we can have the conversation where we're not demonizing our neighbor and talk about immigration from, you know, a standpoint that begins in humanity, I think that you can work on something. I think that we also should be pragmatic. I mean, how many millions of folks in America are living undocumented? And is that pragmatic and real that we somehow round them all up and then deport them? I don't think that's humane. I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's practical or pragmatic. So I think that Congress needs to come up with a bill that handles immigration with folks that are here now, and then ultimately how to secure our borders in now and in the future.
But would you agree that the Biden administration mishandled the border?
I think that they didn't make it a focus, but in perception is reality. You know, if Americans aren't seeing it being focused on or seeing a vice president being dispatched and handling the situation, in typical one of politics is define your opponent before you can define them. And I think that in the presidential races, the Republican Party was very good at labeling and defining Democrats on that issue, as they are very good at defining Democrats on social issues that become polarizing. I mean, if you talk to some people, they would think that Democrats only care about you know, a certain sample set of things. But, you know, we care about the economy. We care about union wages. We care about building our infrastructure. We care about public safety, you know, and Democrats need to take control of their narrative of being a Big Ten party and what we stand for, and not letting our opponents define us on social issues that tend to be polarizing.
I will just say this, my last thing on the immigration. I would like to see, you know, the Kathy Hochuls, the Sean Ryans, applaud Buffalo ERO, ICE Buffalo, for, you know, the creeps they do get off the street. I mean, some of these are some of the worst criminals, Mitch, and they're, you know, making sure they get deported. I would think that we could all come together and agree that, you know, these people with pages-long rap sheet, we need to make sure they're out of the country.
And Joe, and you know, we have people who live domestically who have pages long rap sheets too. And regardless of their immigration status, you know, there's criminality that we find that is pervasive in all areas. So I think that, you know, I think that if we're going to take this from a view of keeping people safe, I think that we need to look at it, you know, in the totality.
Mitch, are you good for another segment?
Sure.
Oh my gosh, thank you. Because I want to ask you some local things that you were commenting on yesterday, as well as one more national topic. So I promise I won't hold you too long. I appreciate it.
No problem.
That is Mitch Nowakowski. He'll join us for another segment. Really happy to get this segment started off. Let me know what you think. 803-0930, *930 on the Volkswagen of Orchard Park text board.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. It's about getting the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. And to find candidates who match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. Stop struggling to get your job post even seen on other sites. Give your job the best chance to be seen with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. They help you stand out and hire quality candidates who can drive the results you need. Sponsored Jobs boost your post for quality candidates so you can reach the exact people you want faster. Join the 1.6 million companies that sponsor their jobs with Indeed. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So that means a half day. Yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds slow after 35 gigabytes of networks busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Hey, welcome back. Joe Beamer here on News Radio 930 WBEN. And yes, we've started the Wednesday with an elected Democrat. And Mitch Nowakowski has been nice enough not only to agree to the segment, but to stay for the holdover. Mitch, where I want to pick this up is move on. Mamdani in New York, right? He won the Democratic primary. He's got, you know, what some would say are far left opinions. Do you think Mamdani is more the future mindset of the Democratic Party?
Well, so, you know, when you're looking at the, you know, in New York City elections, it's a ranked choice voting. So they do have a, you know, a different voting system, which is in first past the poll. And the second person that came in was Andrew Cuomo, a centrist and a former governor. And so, you know, to the folks when I was talking in my party, you know, the Democratic Party, that said, look, you know, what, where did this split come from? Is this because we have a Big Ten party? You know, the first is that the centrist candidate was Andrew Cuomo, and he had a lot of baggage. And, you know, how would a centrist candidate who had name rec and money, how would they have performed against the top vote getter? But ultimately, you know, he got in first because he spoke about the issues that matter to New Yorkers. I think because we're Buffalonians and we don't live in New York City, when we hear someone say universal pre-K, municipal grocery stores, fast rapid transit, that is, you know, that people can afford, and some of those things, you know, they, to us, since we don't live in New York City, might seem obscure, but to the actual voters of that electorate who thus voted for him by pretty decent margins and even prevailing in a, you know, in a not first past the post election, demonstrates what the electorate is currently feeling. And that's, you know, my former predecessor, David Fronczak, would always say that Election Day, well, now that is, it's more because we have early voting, is a snapshot in time of what people are feeling in that moment and what has led up to that moment. So I think that, you know, when you're looking about, is this the future of the Democratic Party? It wasn't that long ago that Democratic voters voted for Mayor Eric Adams, who is the complete opposite of the winner of the Democratic primary who will face in the general election in New York City. And so you're a lot of, for me, when I woke up, I said, wow, how did that electorate make that switch? And I think that it's more than just a general sense of malaise of voters, but it's, you know, we live, you know, Beamer, we live in a rapid time. We live everything fast. I have constituents that come in and say, well, I need this done tomorrow. We have 24-hour news cycle. People are looking for politicians to be, you know, more accessible, more transparent. And to me, I think why he won was because he talked about the actual issues that New Yorkers are facing every day.
Do you buy the story I heard this morning that Hakeem Jeffries and Kathy Hochul are concerned with what his election could mean for business owners? And again, is that a good reflection of Democratic policies?
You know, I don't know if, you know, what you know, when people win, they have you know, conversations of you know, who believe will lead. I think that I can, you know, say with certainty that most elected officials want the winner, if they were rooting for them, or not to be successful, because if they're successful, then the area that they represent is successful. But again, you know, you bring up a really good point is, you know, the other side has been very good at labeling Democrats as not good for business. And then, you know, Democrats are saying that, look, when we talk to business, we just don't want people to exploit the market. We want to make sure people have fair wages. We want to make sure people are, you know, getting paid a living wage. We want to make sure that we have workers' benefits. Because, Joe, when employers don't pay a living wage, or don't have benefits and someone's working 40 hours, then that person is more likely to then have to rely on SNAP, government assistance, for their health care, for their housing. And what Democrats believe is if you're working 40 hours, and especially if you're working more than 40 hours, you got to be able to live. So I think that, you know, he does appear to be the winner. I think that maybe people are thinking about what policies he might bring and how they might float with the electorate and ultimately how they'll improve communities. So they're probably forecasting what they might think comes from him. But as someone who got elected and then sworn in, you definitely, once you get in, have your bearings and realize, you know, what's achievable and what can I do moving forward while you're physically occupying the office.
I'm glad what you said there at the end, because that brings up something that has been debated since the big, beautiful bill and its passing. We had Pat Burke on Hardline a few weeks ago. And, this Medicaid debate. And you talk about how the shift in the Democrat Party, you know, in the 90s, the Clinton administration wanted working provisions for able-bodied people who are on Medicaid. It seems like now you have Democrats pushing back on that. How do you see that? And again, to this talk of compromising, where would a reasonable compromise be in Mitch Nowakowski's opinion?
Well, so, I love talking about the world according to Mitch. So my first thing that I want to talk about first is the earning requirement for Medicaid. These programs, they are so low. They almost force you, if you want health care, to not work to be able to get health care. And, if you need Medicaid, you need, and for your family, that's the most important, besides food, shelter, and, you know, housing, is health care, to make sure that you can do it. So, and have it. So, you know, the last time I had spoken to somebody who actually happened to, you know, who was on Medicaid, the barrier was very, very low. How can somebody work? And oftentimes when we were having the conversation about how much a rent costs, how much groceries cost, how much utilities cost, it was almost counterintuitive for this person to work, because then they lose their Medicaid and then not be able to afford health insurance. So to me, everything is backwards. We should be reexamining, the threshold and the income requirements. And wake up every single day and contribute to the workforce, to the economy. My mom retired and wanted to work part time. I have friends that are living with disabilities who are, you know, have fantastic jobs, who are waking up every day contributing to this economy. So I think that, you know, having a work component to Medicaid is, and having folks contribute, to the overall system is something that probably wouldn't or shouldn't face, too much scrutiny. It's just making sure that that it's functional. You know, there's times where some folks that I know, when Obamacare first came out, they said, look, you know, I had to make, you know, $27,000 to be able to even afford the plan that they were giving me. So that's where the transition from this sounds good, this looks good on paper, but what's the pragmatic approach and what does this look like in real life? Can I actually access and afford this health care if I work 40 hours a week with my income? But then you see in this economy, you see that rent has skyrocketed, the cost of food and fuel skyrocketed, housing skyrocketed, and the money that you have in your bank account isn't covering your basic needs. And how is that functional if you want people to work, but the income guidelines are so low where it's almost counterintuitive to even work?
You brought up minimum wage a few minutes ago, and this is something, Mitch, don't get me wrong, I upset my own audience with my take on this. But I feel not every job is meant to be a livable wage job, right? When I was a kid in high school, I worked at Lenovo on Main Street in Williamsville. I wasn't making money to live. I was making money so I could hang out with my friends on the weekends. Continuing to raise the minimum wage, doesn't that hurt businesses that depend on high school, college labor of people who were like me? They just want money so they can go out and hang out with their friends. And shouldn't there be some kind of wage for those type of jobs? Again, I mean, I work a part-time job. It's not my livable wage job. That's my I have bill season tickets and I want to keep them job.
You know, I think that, you know, the comparison now, I mean, I think I started minimum wage, it was like $6.75 when I first started working when I was 15, I had my working papers. The fact is that just wages, in comparison to what it is to live your life, just don't match up anymore. And, you know, there's hardworking Americans in our communities every single day that get up and work a minimum wage job for a multitude of reasons. But ultimately, you know, I understand where you're saying, look, you know, instead of working a minimum wage job, you know, do you want to get a trade? Do you want to get a skill? Do you want to go somewhere where you can get, a craft, become a funeral director, become a licensed cosmetologist? You can take advantage of one of those programs so that you don't have to rely on a minimum wage job. but that would require a great, robust, education system. That would require community colleges to be accessible and free. That would require, families and people and, schools from a remediate age to help guide there. But I do think that there should be a livable way. I mean, we can't have someone working 40 hours a week at a job and make substandard wages that then exasperates their issues. So if you're working a minimum wage job at 40 hours and you don't have any social safety net, you don't have parents' couch that you could sleep on, you don't have a friend's basement to sleep in, then doesn't that just compound your issues even worse? So not only you're working 40 hours, you're not making enough to even go back to school or to pay your rent or to have health care. It just snowballs and then sticks you in a corner even further that you can't get out of. So, I certainly understand that, restaurants and people say, look, our margins are this and we can't afford it. But ultimately, I've always had developers and other folks say, I'm not going to make any money from this. And then they drive in their BMW back to the suburbs and you're saying, wait, you're not making any money. How much is that just not, you're not making enough money according to you? So I think the economics are also, Joe, is that, when we have people have money in their pockets after earning the wages, they can buy homes, they can buy apartments, they can go back to college, they can take out a loan, they can go get a car, and that all stimulates the economy, which is also what we want, is a density of people who are spending in their everyday lives.
Speaking of the CEO, the founder of the business, I understand. I mean, they are taxed more, just by the percentage of taxes. And we live in New York State. We're all taxed more than most other places in the country. I look at it this way, because I see what you're saying, right? You're complaining about money, but you're driving your beautiful car to your beautiful house. But a lot of these people, I mean, look at Jeff Bezos. This is a guy that lived on the floor of his garage while he was building his business from nothing. Doesn't it sound like the Democrat talking points in 2025 says, well, Jeff, you built up your company. Now we're going to penalize you for building up such a success?
No, I don't think, we shouldn't be penalized. I mean, Democrat, nobody should begrudge anybody, but I think that it's saying, look, you made a ton of money and you're running an operation here and you're employing people and, we're not going to have you exploit labor markets and exploit workers, that you have to provide, these standard of conditions to the workforce. And, I think that when it comes down to taxes, and I certainly understand where people say, look, we're so taxed in New York, and but New York, we have so many services and really great schools, and there's so much beauty to talk about New York that is paid for by the taxpayers of the state of New York. But I would like to say, when we talk about taxes, Joe, is, say you say, okay, I'm just going to make an arbitrary number up, 5%. Everyone has to pay 5% of their income tax. 5% for a guy that's making $50,000 is a lot different than 5% for some guy that's making $5 million. The guy that's making $50,000 is going to feel the pinch and feel that percentage more than somebody who's making a ton more money than them. So I think having an equitable and fair taxing system for where everybody works hard, chips into the pot for infrastructure, lights, streets, sidewalks, police services, fire services, our military, and everything that we need to perform and to have a healthy and safe society chips in their fair share.
Well, Mitch, that is one thing we don't see eye to eye. But one thing I know you and I both agree on is we want what's best for Buffalo, because as Buffalo goes, Western New York goes. And, just a few months ago, the Broadway Market was in the spotlight, as it is every Easter. And you guys made an announcement yesterday. Explain what this means for the Broadway Market and the future of the Broadway Market.
So the Broadway Market has been an institution since 1888, when it began in farmland from German immigrants and German and Polish immigrants. And Joe, I'm going to tell you, I pulled out in my office a report from then Fillmore District Councilwoman Shirley Stolarski, who commissioned a report in May in 1979 about Broadway Fillmore, about Broadway Market, and how to to turn this decline around. And she points to the typical problems of that time that led to our urban areas being led, but it was a decline in population, she points to, especially in young people, the buying power of the people who live in the neighborhood going down because jobs were lost, raising crime rates, visible deterioration of vacant buildings and a loss of business to suburban shopping malls and plazas. So all of that happening in the 60s and 70s led to hard economic times for the Broadway market, and the nostalgia really kept it going for all these years. So the structure at the Broadway market is a city-owned building. We oftentimes run in the red to keep it open because we know that it's important not only to the neighborhood of Broadway Fillmore, but to the greater region of what it means. And we see a ton of density and people that come in for one time a year. We need to replicate it for it to be all year round. And, you know, the one thing that I want to tell people about the Broadway market, yes, we love it and we love the traditions and we love it to what it brings. But as Councilwoman Stolarski put in her report at that time, any revitalization must consider the vitality of the Broadway market as an essential asset for the district as a whole. So if you're rooting for the East Side, you're rooting for Buffalo, you're rooting for Broadway Fillmore, you need to root for the Broadway market, because that large cultural institution becoming super viable will then lead as a large catalyst of change for the area. And so throughout over 100 years of it being an inception, Joe, there were nonprofit management entities that were controlled either by Griffin or Councilmember Franzek had people on there. They, you know, were up, then they dissolved. Then there was all these problems and issues that happened with the management of the issue. And for a long time, we had one staffer. We still do, Kathy Peterson, the market manager, who works for the city of Buffalo, who's a fantastic person, fantastic woman, and a fantastic manager. She's holding down the fort there, one person. And then I think that we put it like a $22,000 at promotional in our city budget. So I knew, Joe, that the city of Buffalo has no business running a municipal market. We should go fix our budget issues and infrastructure and deal with the issues that we have every day to day. And I knew that a management entity, if it was appropriately formed, we had the right players at the team. Everyone had expertise, a lawyer, developer, someone that lives in the district, a retailer, a vendor. And you got the right people on that board that they can manage the market operations and then ultimately be the nonprofit entity that can go stump for foundations for more money. So I said last night on Channel 7 is that the Broadway market, we always had plan after plan after plan after plan, 1979 a plan, 89 a plan, 1999 a plan. We had all these plans and it's been studied to death. It's just all these plans just never had a chunk of change or a windfall of money. And Governor Hochul allotted over $40 million for the revitalization of the Broadway market. And then Ralph Wilson Foundation will be giving a pretty decent chunk to the management entity to hire a market manager, stump for vendors, somebody who has design experience, someone who, you know, to build a team who can actually run a municipal market and make it something beautiful for everyone to enjoy. Because I travel around the world, and some of the most exquisite places I've been to, they've had municipal markets. And I think that, you know, in Buffalo, we can do hard things and we deserve nice things. And so I think that next year, we're going to start seeing a lot of significant changes. So the lease that we passed on the Common Council states that the management entity will begin running the operations at the Broadway Market starting next July 2026. And that's when you'll start seeing bids and work out. Of course, we are not going to do work for, up until, next April, next Easter. We want a healthy Easter and don't want to do anything to disrupt that. But then you'll start seeing, that summer, you'll start seeing the management entity up running and not only managing the day-to-day operations of the market, but ultimately the large-scale cash infusion of dollars to completely redevelop the Broadway market.
Yeah, I wish for the best, like you said, plan after plan. And I always say this, Mitch, I might disagree with, you know, some of your politics, some of the city's politics, especially disagree with New York politics. But, you know, I do love living in Western New York, and a vibrant Buffalo, a Buffalo on the right track is good for all of us. And I don't care what party you belong to. If you can make it happen, that's all we're asking for. And a big 2026. You mentioned the Broadway market. We also have the first and second round of the NCAAs. I'm sure you and everyone the council's getting psyched up for that.
We want density. We want people coming in. We want people to enjoy, because successful urban areas, Joe, they have a nightlife economy. They have a sports economy. They have beautiful buildings that people adaptively reuse. They have strong public transit. People aren't always, the first question out of their mouth isn't, where am I going to park? It's going to be, what venue are you going to? Are you seeing a show at Shays? And that's what a successful urban metropolitan area goes to. And I think urban studies is a class that I think we should all take about why cities are different than suburbs and rural areas and what their economics look like, and that we can enjoy a world-class city.
All right, Mitch, I really appreciate you doing this. Please get the word out. You know, I push back, I give my opinion, but I think I gave you fair time to put your opinion out there, and we can see where we disagree, where maybe we find some common ground. So get the word out there. And also, next time you're talking, you know, you're the vice chair of the Erie County Democrats. Could you tell them to unblock me on Twitter? I know we disagree, but it'd be nice to know what's going on.
I'll be sure to send a message. And, you know, Joe, we're both like the practically the same age, and you might be a Republican, I might be a Democrat, and you know, we could talk about issues and talk about them in a respectful way, and life will move on. People need to talk to each other and lighten up.
100%. Mitch, I really, really appreciate the time, and I know we'll talk again soon. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Joe.
That is Fillmore District Common Council member Mitch Nowakowski. He is also the vice chair of the Erie County Democrats, giving you his take on the way he sees things. I obviously put my opinion out there. That's how it's different from Hardline, right? On Sunday, I let the politicians talk. I don't give the Joe Beamer opinion. On this segment, on this show, you get my opinion. And yeah, I am going to push back. And I knew Mitch would be a great person to start this off, because he isn't going to get, you know, upset that I said something he disagrees with and hang up. We need more people like that on both sides, by the way, who will hear the opposing viewpoint. And I hope this opens it up to more. I'm hoping that we can continue this segment going on, maybe even get Sean Ryan. And I know Mark Poloncarz won't come on. Mark Poloncarz doesn't have the confidence to come on like Mitch Nowakowski does. Mitch Nowakowski can have a conversation. The minute you disagree with Mark Poloncarz, it turns into a lecture, and then, you know, he just hangs up. So I'm not holding my breath for that. I do think we'll be able to get Sean Ryan on before the election. And again, really appreciate what Mitch joining us. Obviously, we disagree on many things that we talked about, and we'll talk about that. And New York State wants electric buses. I thought this ship had sailed. We'll talk about that and much more. It's Beamer on WBEN. Welcome back. Second hour here on News Radio 930 WBEN. 803-0930, star 930 gets you on to the show. Again, my thanks to Mitch Nowakowski. And I think that'll be a segment we'll be able to do every week. And again, it's to get you the mindset of someone, you know, on the other side than me, right? And to break out of that echo chamber, and hopefully we can continue to find Democrats who want to break out of their echo chamber. You know, I mean, we see how upset Democrats get when their echo chamber, one of their echo chamber shows gets canceled. But hopefully we can continue this, and I think it is something that we could all use. Again, having an insight to the other political side and just seeing where, you know, we agree and disagree. And again, I think Mitch is a great guy and always appreciate him coming on the show. There are a lot of things there we disagree with. I mean, the tax thing for me is that is one that if I was in elected office, I would be very vocal about. And this is coming from someone who, believe me, doesn't have all the money in the world. But I do think if you work your butt off and you build something from nothing, and you're, you know, and now you are reaping the rewards for years and years, and for some people, decades of hard work, why should the government then say, well, now you need to pay a higher, you're going to pay more, right? You're going to pay more based on the percentage. I don't like that. Where's the incentive to work your butt off, you know? And I know I talk about minimum wage all the time, but, you know, 10, 15 years ago, I'd say closer to 15 years ago, you know, I was juggling three jobs. I had two radio jobs and a retail job. I was probably working close to 80 hours a week. But you know why? Because I was chasing a dream, right? I was working hard. Never did I expect that my employers would say, well, you've worked 80 hours. We're going to, you know, no. I got, you know, increases for good work and for, you know, another year gone by. But I wanted more money, and I wanted more experience in my field. Okay, well, yeah, I worked. And I didn't have much of a social life for two of those years. And you know what? I think finally, so many years later, it is finally paying off. And guess what? That's life. Sometimes it'll pay off. Other times it won't. You can work really hard at something for 10, 20 years, and it just won't be what you, it will never get to the point where you wanted it. That's the reality of life. I just don't think the government should be holding our hand. And that's why I'm so vocal on minimum wage. You know, I have a lot of friends who either own business or, you know, are high up in a business. And, you know, those high school, college kids that work for the summer, work for a season, that's how they're able to make a benefit. That's how they're able to keep your food prices cheap. And I don't know what that was that just went on to the mic. Something's going on outside. So, you know, now they're getting a livable wage. But, you know, when I was in high school, I didn't need a livable wage. Like I said, I was making money to go hang out with friends or put gas in my car because that's when gas was 4 and a quarter. Those jobs, you know, employers depend on those jobs. Companies depend on those jobs. Now to say that you have to pay a 17-year-old $16 an hour, why? Why? That never should be the case. There are jobs that are meant to be part-time jobs. I work a part-time job on top of this because I like to do things. I like to go on road trips. I like to have season tickets to sports teams. That's my choice. That job shouldn't be a livable wage, right? I'm not depending on that job for a livable wage. Why should they pay me more and raise your prices? Get what I'm saying? So that's, but you know, that's the whole point of that segment. We're going to talk about things that we disagree on, and I think everyone's better for it. I think everyone's better to have an insight into something like that. 803-0930, star 930, if you have a comment on that or something you'd like to add to what you heard with Mitch Nowakowski. And like I said, I have a feeling that he will be a return guest for that segment because he is so open to coming on and giving his opinions. And and we need more of that in politics on both sides. But, you know, when you have Donald Trump going to talk to Terry Moran, who a month later gets fired for some outburst on Twitter against Trump and Stephen Miller, and then you have the mayoral candidate for Buffalo who's issuing statements to Channel 7, not even giving a verbal interview, won't come on this station. You have a county executive who will only talk to people who think like him, doesn't care about the constituents on the other side of the aisle, talks down to everybody. That's not good for politics. People like Mark Poloncarz is not good for politics. You need people like Mitch Nowakowski. Again, we can have our disagreements, but that is someone you talk. You don't care. You don't need a questionnaire. You know, as David says, when you walk into the Rath building, you don't need to answer a questionnaire of where you stand politically. Mitch Nowakowski will come on. He'll tell you what's going on in his district and his thoughts on what's going on throughout the party and throughout the country. And I think, like I said, I think we're all better for it. Now, this is something that I really thought we were done. And I don't know why. We were done with the electric school bus push in New York State. However, New York State has announced, and this was yesterday, New York State announced school bus incentive program for electric school buses. The funding allows school districts to be covered for installment costs of switching from gas-powered buses. The governor's office has announced $200 million is now available for zero-emission school buses. The funding will be distributed through New York State School Bus Incentive Program on a first-come, first-served basis for school districts. The funding is the third installment of the Clean Water, Clean Air, and Green Jobs Environmental Bond Act, which was passed in 2022. It's also offering incentives to school districts, including vouchers, to help offset the cost of installing charging stations. Again, it's wild to me that they're just ignoring the facts, because electric buses in the cold, are not reliable. And if you look at New York State, most of the school districts are in areas that are going to get pretty cold temperatures. I mean, you think of Western New York, you think of Central New York. I mean, Syracuse is usually a gloomy place, especially in the winter. I mean, people in Syracuse forget that the sun exists in the winter, okay? Now you're going to incentivize these schools. You're going to throw millions and millions of dollars to get these electric buses. This is from the Cornell Chronicle, okay, citing a study. Electric buses face operational challenges in cold weather, primarily due to reduced battery range and decreased efficiency. Cold temperatures impact battery performance, requiring more energy for heating the cabin and maintaining optimal battery temperature, thus shortening the distance the bus can travel on a single charge. Now, I take you to 2000, the blizzard of 2000. Do you remember the scene in Western New York? I do. I was walking home from Mr. Bardo's detention. By the way, Mr. Bardo, one of my favorite teachers I ever had, and I deserved every one of those detentions. So the night that the blizzard, or the afternoon the blizzard started coming down, I was in Mr. Bardo's detention, and you can see the lights from the school at my parents' house, so it's not a far, it's like a block, right? It's not like he was keeping me, and I had to walk across town afterwards. So I walk home, and I remember thinking, man, there's a lot of snow that's falling. I was in sixth grade, and the snow kept coming, and school buses were getting stuck. Do you remember this? Well, if those were electric school buses, and say they got stuck for a couple of hours in the freezing cold as the snow's coming down, can you imagine the situation that we would be in today? Kids on the bus, battery dies because it's so cold, no more heat, you're stuck on the thruway, you're stuck somewhere on a road. Now you're going to have to depend on someone with a gas-powered bus to come get you. And it makes an avoidable situation. It puts kids in a situation that you, the state of New York, caused. And we've been over this time and time again. The battery, the electric, I'm sure there will be a day. I'm sure there will be a day, and maybe even my lifetime, where we'll have batteries that can, you know, stay for 1,000 miles and are resistant to the cold temperatures. We're not there yet. Why are we trying to ram this initiative down everyone's throat when we're not prepared? We are not prepared for this. But they just want these green initiatives. They shove them in your face. Is it gonna take a situation like I just said? It's gonna take a situation like that to freaking open up the eyes of these environmentalists who own Albany now? I can't believe we're here. I really cannot believe that we're here. You want to take an electric car, you want an electric car initiative in New York State, spend money you don't have, fine. But we're talking about our kids in transportation with something that we are just not at the level to where it can replace the gas-powered buses. I think you're playing with fire. And I'm hoping there's a pushback on this. I'm hoping that local districts don't sign up for it because, again, it gets cold in Buffalo. Most of the school year, it's cold. And for months like January and February, it is freezing cold most of the time. Would you be happy with your child getting on one of these electric school buses? Freezing cold? I mean, again, the bus breaks down. Now you have to walk to school. You have to wait for another bus. I don't think it is worth the risk to start replacing school buses with electricity. I just, we're not there. Like I keep saying, We will be there one time. You want to put hybrid buses? Fine. Again, I think New York State can find something better for the $200 million that they're spending on this program. However, hybrid, okay, that makes sense. Just electric, all-electric bus, this moving away from gas. It's, in my opinion, it's the wrong choice. And hopefully, we have a change of thought in Albany in 2026 in some of these initiatives where the state's spending millions and millions of dollars they don't have will be vetoed and cut, and we won't see it. Hopefully, New Yorkers are going to wake up in 26. And in large part because of bail reform and initiatives like this, the government telling you what type of car you can drive. Albany moving away from gas and trying to force electric on you when you live in a cold climate, overpowering the electric grid. I mean, we think back to the 22 blizzard. If you were all electric and your power goes out, and you don't have a gas furnace, these are not stable ideas for the climate we live in. Now, you want to put electric buses all over Florida? Okay. It's not getting 10 degrees outside. But to me, this spells trouble. And I have a feeling we're going to see these fleets that do get replaced with electric buses. Within 5 years, you're going to see gas-powered buses added back to the fleet as having at least something to lean back on, which then again just shows the absolute waste that this is. 803-0930, star 930. That's the number to get on. Your thought of this electric push by New York State that continues today. I mean, where are we going to be in 2035? Do you really think that we're going to all be driving EVs in 2035? I think that's crazy. And you know what? If I were to build a home tomorrow, I would hope that they would hook gas up to it. Because I can't imagine in the next 20, 30 years that we'll be able to be 100% dependent on electric. Like I think gas is still going to play a major role and should play a major role, especially when you live in, like I said, a cold climate. They're continuing to double down and double down and double down. And they won't listen to anyone who tells them they're wrong. 803-0930, star 930. That gets you on the show. It also gets you on the Volkswagen of Orchard Park text board. If you want to comment on this or anything you heard Mitch and I talk about in the first hour, when we come back, we will take your calls on this. We'll also play you a clip from The View. They're telling you that the Constitution is pretty much being ripped up with Colbert being canceled. Yes, that was said on The View today. We'll play you that clip. We'll talk to Bob and Elma all after the news with Tom Puckett on News Radio 930 WBEN.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. It's about getting the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. And to find candidates who match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. Stop struggling to get your job post even seen on other sites. Give your job the best chance to be seen with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. They help you stand out and hire quality candidates who can drive the results you need. Sponsored Jobs boost your post for quality candidates so you can reach the exact people you want faster. Join the 1.6 million companies that sponsor their jobs with Indeed. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So that means a half day. Yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds slow after 35 gigabytes of networks busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Let's go, girls.
Come on. Oh, yeah. Welcome back. Beamer on WBEN. Hope you're having a great hump day. I got to tell you, Shania Twain she put on a great show. I don't know what I was expecting. I don't think I expected it to be that good, you know? I mean, that removed from the last hit she had on the radio. And it was a good show. And who are we seeing this week? Soundgarden and Live. And then in 2 weeks, Nelly and Ja Rule. Can't wait for that show. That's a Friday show. So this will be the pregame for that concert. 803-0930, star 930. Talking about electric buses, New York State now has an initiative, $200 million going to districts who put in a claim for reimbursement of installation fees. I think this is the wrong direction by the state. And I just, again, when it's as cold as it is in Western New York, Central New York, I mean, think about way upstate. I don't think it's a sustainable option, and I think within 5 years, you're going to have these districts replacing the electric buses with gas-powered buses again. What do you think? Let's go to Bob in Elma. Bob, your thoughts on these electric school buses?
Yeah, I got a couple of minutes before I go into work. I belong to Elma, and I have the Iroquois School District, and when I went up there to vote for the school budget, I asked them, because they were exchanging out some diesel buses. I said, these diesel buses can go for an easy 100, 200,000 miles on them. He told me that once there's any kind of sign of rust on there, they have to exchange them out. And then I said, well, the electric buses are almost three times the cost of a regular bus, a diesel bus. So we're going to get the same life expectancy out of an electric bus, and they're going to exchange them out because they have a tiny bit of rust on them. It doesn't make any sense to me.
No, I get you. Now, are they going to get the electric buses, though?
He was talking about it. They were talking about if they could get some kind of grant, from what I understand, from the state.
So they're going to put in for this very program?
They may be doing that. I'm not exactly sure, but that's what they told me last time. But yep. Like I said, if you're exchanging a bus, because a diesel, like I said, can go for hundreds of thousands of miles.
Right.
But they said as soon as there's a tiny bit of rust, we're going to pay three times the amount of money for the same life expectancy?
So they don't go by mileage. They just go by if rust starts forming, that bus is automatically retired.
That's what they had told me.
Man, I wonder how much money, with all the salt on the roads in Elma, yeah, how much money they're going through on buses in a year.
Yeah, and I don't have kids, which, you know, I have no problem helping, you know, kids get an education, but my wife and I are paying just as much, if not more, in taxes for the school than people with kids, and now they want to waste even more money on these electric buses, as far as I can see it.
Yeah, that's ridiculous, Bob. And, you know, the electric buses in Elma, of all places, because to my understanding, that's a pretty spread out school district. And it gets cold and it snows in Elma. I don't see it as a realistic, reasonable option.
I don't either.
Man, that is so interesting about the rust, Bob. I want to ask more questions about that. I'll have to get someone from the Iroquois School District. Hey, Bob, appreciate you hanging on, man. Bob in Elma. Can you imagine that? And that might be an Elma thing. I mean, I've seen some school buses where, yeah, it is time to replace it because of the rust, but that's not been in districts around here. And, you know, Elma, you know, okay, so he confirmed. I mean, they're going to look to get into this grant. I mean, that's like the last school district I would want to have electric school buses. It's not a dependable option for what you want it to do in 2025. We're still, you know, developing this. We're still trying to get more life out of the battery before a charge. Why run to this? You know what I mean? It's like running to... This is a really bad analogy, but it's the first thing that comes off the top of my head. It's like in 1940-something when they had the little TV on the humongous piece of furniture. And I'm not talking about a console TV from the 70s. I'm talking about, have you seen like an original TV where it's the screen is the size of a TI-81 calculator and it's on a piece of furniture that looks like what a record player used to be on? You know what I'm talking about? It's like if that happened and the state said, okay, we're going to get 300 of these to put in every government building. Again, I know this is a really bad example. But why? We're still developing this. We're still going to get to the best option of it. Why are you throwing money on it now? And again, why are you putting it in districts where we know the battery life throughout the school year is going to be worse in months like January and February? I mean, that's not Joe Beamer telling you that. That's Cornell University telling you that. So why force these initiatives when, A, it's not the top product, we're not at the best point of it yet, and we know that they're going to struggle in cold weather? I mean, can you putting the green initiative ahead of safety? Really? That's, to me, that's just going too far with this. And like I said, I really hope that the districts around here don't play into it, because as we stand right now, you need the gas power. We're gonna have cold weeks. We're gonna have snowstorms, and we're gonna have to get kids from the school home. And a lot of the districts around here, especially down in the south towns, they're spread out. So now, if you're sitting out in the cold, and you're heating the cabin, kids got to be warm, and it's getting cold, so you're getting less and less life out of that battery. What is the plan? What is the plan when that bus is stuck at a light in the middle of nowhere? That doesn't make any sense. There wouldn't be a light in the middle of nowhere. What happens when that bus is stuck on a road in the middle of nowhere? I'd love to have an answer from a superintendent, from someone in the legislature. Maybe we'll have Pat Burke on next week, or some Democrat on next week from the state level who can answer that. The Stephen Colbert thing continues to get so much attention. And of course, I'm just eating all this up. Like, I think it's hilarious. I think a lot of these pundits are making you-know-whats of themselves. And it doesn't add up. It doesn't add up. These people think that you're not going to convince, I don't think, the average American that Stephen Colbert was fired because he doesn't like Trump when the same CBS has a very liberal news organization. The same Paramount still employs The Daily Show. By the way, the same Paramount just re-upped South Park. You know why? Because South Park is still funny. That's why. South Park is still funny. Stephen Colbert was funny when he was playing a character. He was never funny on The Late Show. People want, when you watch The Late Show, people usually would want funny people. Now, you've got, you know, a bunch of people in their late, a bunch of liberals in their late 60s who go to the No Kings rally and then come home and watch Stephen Colbert. That's not what CBS wanted. That's not what the advertisers of the show wanted. And that's why CBS is losing $40 million on the Colbert show. But Sonny Huston over on The View says that CBS firing Stephen Colbert is dismantling the Constitution. This is from The View this morning. I'm playing the clip so you don't have to watch it.
It could be financial. And I don't know that it's purely political. It could be. But my concern is, if it is political, then everyone should be concerned. People on the right should be concerned. People on the left should be concerned. Because it's very clear that if it is political, this is the dismantling of our democracy. This is the dismantling of our Constitution, right? And so the First Amendment is the First Amendment for a reason, and that is freedom of the press, freedom of speech, freedom to speak truth to power. If that is taken away, if the comedians are being attacked, then that means our Constitution is being dismantled.
That's right.
That means the very rubric of our democracy is being dismantled. And I think every single person should be really, really concerned about it. I'm thrilled that Senator Warren, Elizabeth Warren, Senator Bernie Sanders is asking Skydance, is asking for answers whether or not this was political. The Writers Guild is actually asking the Attorney General to look into this situation to find out if it was political. And if we find out it is political, what are we going to do as a country? We must protect our Constitution and we must protect our democracy.
Can you believe people still watch that show? And they show the crowd. You know, this is not going to... I might get canceled after saying this, but I'm going to say it. They pan the crowd, and there's guys in the crowd of The View. I love my wife to death. And there's a lot of things that my wife can drag me to, right? Now, my wife would never go and sit on a recording of The View, but let's just suspend disbelief for a second, okay? That would be one too far. If my wife dragged me, if you saw me in the crowd of The View with my wife, that is me blinking twice. I need help. Get me out of this relationship. Get me out of this situation. They pan the crowd. There's just guys, they're clapping for Joy Behar. What is going on? But the fact that people still watch this show, number one, it wasn't political. It's economical, okay? You don't keep something, again, unless you're run by the government, which CBS isn't, you don't leave something on the air that's bleeding money, right? There's a reason Guiding Light isn't on anymore. It's not because they were protesting against Donald Trump in 2009, okay? There's a reason All My Children aren't on anymore. They weren't making money, right? If you know, this show is pretty new, but if a year from now, Odyssey looks and goes, wow, we're losing money every time Joe opens his mouth. Joe Beamer's not going to be on the air anymore. You know what I mean? Like, that's how business works. We can't all work for NPR and PBS, who, again, until recently, were somewhat funded by the government and could just bring in more money. Right? We work for advertisers who pay our bill. And if advertisers don't want to put their name on a particular show, well, that show most likely is going to go away. So those are the facts. And like, I don't think you have to work in media to know how that works. Colbert wasn't doing what he was paid to do. The advertisers didn't want to advertise that show. It's gone, right? As much as I love The Price is Right, the day that The Price is Right can't get advertisers or sponsors to give them the prizes, there is no more Price is Right. That's how it works. But let's again suspend disbelief. And let's say it was political. Now, it's not. But let's say it was political. Let's say CBS told Stephen Colbert, we don't want the Donald Trump bashing anymore. We're getting rid of you. That is not violating the First Amendment. We've been over this before. The First Amendment means that you can't be arrested for speaking out against your government. But if I right now on the air used an expletive in any way, I'd be fired. Now, I'm not going to jail. I still have my First Amendment right. I had the freedom. Again, you know, I wasn't arrested. There's no one waiting for handcuffs with me for me outside. But if I said something, either a curse word that's not allowed, or if I said something awful about Odyssey or WBEN management, I would be fired, and rightfully so. That's the difference. You can speak out all you want. Your employer doesn't have to keep you employed. You know, if you were like me and worked for Bed Bath & Beyond, and you came to work one day in a shirt that said Bed Bath & Beyond sucked and told all the customers to get out, there's nothing worth buying here, they're probably not going to keep you on the payroll. That's not, they didn't take away your First Amendment right. They said, you're bad for business. Get out of here. Again, that's not what happened with CBS. I don't think you have to look further than $40-50 million a year. The show was losing, and this is a network that would like to make some money to extend their NFL contract. So I just think when you hear stuff like this, you don't understand. I mean, you work in media, Sonny Huston. I would think you'd understand. Either you don't understand or you're playing a bit. And then when you say things like that about the Constitution, you don't understand the First Amendment. It doesn't mean that your employer has to keep you employed no matter what you say. It means you don't get arrested for what you say. So that's a situation that's going to keep on playing out. And I'm loving it. I've been watching old clips of like Letterman and Leno and Conan and Craig Ferguson and just remembering exactly what late night TV was. For a lot of you, it's Johnny Carson. It's funny. There's a local station that plays Johnny Carson, I think, every night at 10 o'clock. I think it's Antenna TV. Do I have that right? And they play, old Johnny Carson's every night. And, I've watched a few of those, but I just miss Carson, right? Carson stepped down at 92. I was 4 years old. When I was, when I had unlimited access to TV over the summer and, weekends, and I could flip around, that was like the height of Letterman, Leno, and Craig Kilborn, and then Craig Ferguson, and Conan, and Carson had his show, and, someone who grew up watching TRL on MTV, Carson had his show at 2:30, so if you could stay up to, 1:30, so if you could stay up to 1:30, then you saw his show, which I forgot, what they call it, Later with Carson? I forgot what the heck they called it. But that was when late night TV was great, and now it's not funny. And I used to really like Jimmy Fallon. When Fallon took over for Conan, I thought he was funny. He's not really as funny either. I mean, at least he still has mostly Hollywood guests. And maybe it's just that Hollywood's lamer now. Maybe that's it. The guests aren't as fun. People aren't as fun. They don't let loose like they used to on shows like that. But this will continue to play out. You're going to continue to hear comments like Sonny Huston. And we'll continue playing them and we'll continue laughing. Another thing, one last thing I wanted to say before we get out of here. So I was at the store. I have a little, you can probably tell, a little congestion. And so I got some DayQuil because I didn't want to have congestion on the air. And there is the regular DayQuil that costs $12. And then there's the extra strength DayQuil that costs $27. I compared the ingredients. They're the exact same. So can someone answer the question, why is one $14 more than the other? And that's the question we're going to leave out for you, and maybe we'll have an answer by tomorrow. But in just a few minutes, Tom Bowerly will hit the airwaves. And Tom, happy hump day. What's
the hair? The hair gets my allergies, make me puke. I go to Florida and get the money. You go to box, you feel shame. Sorry, when you're talking about being congested, I just wanted to do a Denny Lemieux from Slapshot.
Yeah, well, let me tell you, the regular $12 DayQuil did the trick. I've been feeling good for these 2 hours. Tom, what's on your mind this afternoon?
After three, I'm going to tell you why I go to the drugstore and buy Magnums just to impress people. coming up after 3 o'clock, Joe. Actually, they're Magnum Minis, which is really weird. But anyway, we're going to. I think the whole Trump Obama thing, I think, is absolutely huge, and it is mind blowing that it is not getting more coverage, because every time somebody accused President Trump during his first term and afterwards of engaging in some kind of awful behavior, it was all over my cell phone. But the Trump allegations against Obama, it's almost like nobody seems to be talking about it. Either that, or I'm just getting updates on Ozzy Osbourne.
Yeah, lots of updates. I went down a rabbit hole last night, Tom, before I finally fell asleep, just watching clips of the old Osbourne reality show, because that was my introduction to Ozzy.
Well, I said this yesterday, but whoever would have thought back in the 1980s, when he supposedly bit the head off of a bat, that we would look at Ozzy Osbourne as this generation's Hugh Beaumont, Mr. Cleaver, Father of the Year, Mike Brady. Not Tom Brady, Mike Brady, the Brady Bunch.
Yes.
The
yes.
Architect. I mean, Ozzy Osbourne was a tremendous father. I mean, you've watched the show. You know this. His kids adored him. He spent time with his kids. He had a great relationship with his kids. And you know what? In the immortal words of Don Corleone, a man who doesn't spend time with his family can never really be a man.
That's true. That's true.
I owe everything to The Godfather, by the way.
One and two, right? The third one is forgettable?
The third one gets a very bum rap. There are some absolutely weird things in it, like Connie never would have had that much power in a real family. Although the Corleones are a little bit different. But three is not as bad as people say. It, like the other two, are based on actual events involving a guy named Calvi and the Vatican. But you know what? Let's put it this way. It would be like me coming after you. How can I possibly sound good after you and David? I suck.
I don't think so, Tom. I listen to you and go, wow, how do people put up with me for 2 hours?
I listen to myself and say, damn, how do I have a job?
Well, we'll answer that question in just a few minutes. Tom Bowerly is up after Tom Puckett here on News Radio 930 WBEN. Thanks to Mitch Nowakowski. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit DetectTheSOS.com today to learn more.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.